Hello, this is Dina Eccles, recording from our farm in the Driftless and welcoming you to Consider This. From the River to the Sea has become the latest casualty in the war of indoctrination. Congress has enacted a resolution calling the words From the River to the Sea anti-Semitic. While attempting to add millions to Israel's defense and continuing to support the ongoing genocide of Palestinians. Lazy thinking. That's how we've arrived here. Post-World War II, Western countries wished to be rid of the Jewish refugees. They were relocated to Israel, and a Jewish state was recognized in 1948. What could possibly go wrong? May 15 is Nakba, the day that observes Palestinian ethnic cleansing and land theft that occurred then and continues now by the State of Israel. True to their imperialistic nature, the United States, Great Britain, and others supported Israel and engaged in resource grabbing. That was for oil and soon will be for natural gas. Keeping the peace meant condemning the Palestinians to brutal occupation. Israel is a nationalistic state, not a democracy. Palestinians who live in Israel do not share the same freedoms as Israelis. Like the apartheid state of South Africa, that the United States was reluctant to see abolished, we have defended Israel in the occupation and the eradication of Palestinian lands and lives. The brutal attack by Hamas on October 7th was the excuse for more land theft and genocide. These are not empty words. Look at the reality, not the smear campaign of corporate media, not the profiteering warmongers and their congressional lackeys. I have never condoned the violence of October 7, and I will never accept the genocide that has been perpetrated by Israel since that day. Peace is possible. Thank you for listening. You can read more at my blog, Let Kindness Win.
Good evening. You're listening to WDRT Viroqua, 91.9 FM and WDRT.org.
Take a phone ever. I take a camera sometimes, binoculars usually. A quote that I heard in a movie one time, that the heart wants something to love. And sometimes I think that's the way I feel about the trail, that you want to care for something.
The utter simplicity and all the ambiance that's there, the conversations that the birds have, the trees, the little bees going around the flowers. I mean, think about all that they've seen, and you know, we're in their home, and we're a part of their world for a treasured amount of time.
It's just this curiosity of wanting to know more about the sort of landscape around me, right? And reading, wanting to look up and understand why things are the way they are.
This is Choose to be Curious, a show all about curiosity. Typically, we talk about research and theory and have conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. But today, we're doing something a little different. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Welcome. Come, choose to be curious with us. Specifically, come choose to be curious with me along the Mount Vernon Trail, an 18-mile bike and pedestrian path that runs alongside the George Washington Memorial Parkway from near Roosevelt Island outside the urban center of Roslyn in Arlington down to Mount Vernon on the mostly Virginia side of the Potomac River. I was walking along the trail one day and realized I didn't know whose land I was on. D.C., Virginia, federal parkland, Nacochenk lands. And that got me thinking about what other people might see or think about that I was completely missing on this very familiar route. And so a series was conceived in four parts, I hope, of walking a mile or 18 in other people's shoes, seeing a place from multiple perspectives.
It's funny you mentioned not knowing whose land you're on. I was out volunteering with the friends one day, and a man came riding through on his bike. He was clearly on a long journey. He had all sorts of packs and panniers, and he had solar charging panels, and we couldn't help but stop him and say, oh my goodness, where are you going? And he was doing the Greenway, which is basically the whole East Coast. And he asked us, where am I? I kind of know where I've come from and I know where I'm going, but where am I at the moment? And we got to say, well, welcome to Alexandria.
My first stop is with a group of people who devote their time and talent to the trail.
I'm Jed Isbell. I'm the president and one of the co-founders of the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail. One of my first visits to DC when I was looking for a job out here was I was in a taxi and driving along the George Washington Memorial Parkway and saw this busy trail with lots of users on it. And I was like, that's interesting. I love that trail already. In 2018, the Park Service was holding some meetings for trail stakeholder users. And I went to those meetings every 3 months. And the idea kept coming up of starting a friends group to help improve the trail. And so after the third meeting, I stood up and said, who's with me? And let's do this. And then two of my friends who were also at the meetings agreed to start up the organization with me. And so we started in 2018. So the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail is an all-volunteer group that works to improve the trail. We're focused on sort of three pillars. So trail maintenance is the main thing that we do, but we also encourage people to advocate for the trail and for additional resources. And then we also make sure that people appreciate some of the resources that they may not know about. So one event that we do is the Bat and Firefly Walk. So there's a spot on the trail in the summertime that is just awesome with like thousands and thousands of lightning bugs or fireflies lighting up. And most people don't experience that because most people don't use the trail at night. And that same spot also has a bunch of bats that fly overhead at dusk. And so that's another thing that unless you're using the trail at night, like I do, because I use it for transportation, you may not know that that's there and you don't get to experience it. So it's one of our most popular events for attendees and people are just blown away by it. So we have 7 board members that run the organization right now. And we've got 14 event leaders that do trail maintenance events. And all of those are people that showed up to a volunteer event and kept showing up and had a good time. And eventually they showed up enough that I said, hey, would you like to be a volunteer leader so we can get more people involved?
They are a powerhouse of not just value to the trail, but community value. They are such a warm, just bursting at the seams with joy and goodness set of people. I support them wholeheartedly, and I have benefited so much personally, honestly, from what they've done.
Sarah Bagley is a council member in the city of Alexandria and a volunteer with the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail. That was her welcoming the cyclist to Alexandria a moment ago.
I lived in DC for 13 years and was primarily a public transit bicyclist walker. So I certainly experienced the trail occasionally, intermittently in those years as a side effect of some ride I might have done or some social effort. But it really wasn't until I moved to Alexandria in 2016 and moved to Old Town specifically that it became a common element of my existence. I moved to Old Town North in 2018, right off the trail. And my dog and I, to be quite honest, when you have a dog, you're always looking for new places to walk, get out of the same sort of loop. I had a beagle at the time who could follow his nose for hours. I love that about him. It was such a crucial piece of my mental health during the pandemic to just go outside and be around other people in a way that we all felt safe and comfortable and could wave at each other and have a short interaction. Now it's a volunteering opportunity. It is a vital piece of what draws tourists to our area. When you're seeing a new space, you often want to do it on foot. And you want to be able to walk and linger and stop occasionally. And what the trail does, particularly in the portion of it that sort of runs through Old Town, it allows you to stay on foot, but to pop off into a restaurant, to walk into King Street. So as a tourist attraction, which is something Alexandria is very much our brand, it's a vital piece that we provide to people. And the other element that really was elevated when I took office was how vital it is as a commuter, as a connective thread for people actually just trying to get places, locals trying to get places. And transportation is in local politics, you know, potholes and streetlights and traffic are the conversation of the day most days. And so the trail and understanding it's the role it plays in providing an outlet to a walker, to a bicyclist, to get people either off the roads, create more space on the roads, or to create a safe alternative for people who are looking for options. It's very valuable in that way. And so I think it has all the mental health benefits I mentioned and the environmental ones, but as a city, it has financial benefits. It has practical transportation benefits. The trail is one of the most inclusive, diverse spaces I spend time in the city. There are every age group. There are little ones being pushed in strollers, mom and dad looking to get outside, all the way up to seniors in their 80s. So from an age perspective, it is absolutely reflective of the full spectrum of life. And I think that's incredible. It's also really inclusive from an ability perspective. I see people on, I wish I knew the name of this, like a recumbent bike, the kind where you sort of lay back and only use your legs. I've seen people like myself who are recovering from an injury. And so I'm using an e-bike now. I've seen people, a woman who goes out, I see her regularly with a walker, essentially. And she's moving slowly, but she's out there.
I grew up on the Jersey Shore. So the beach was a bike ride away. And the ocean is in my soul. And I know I got my love of nature from my mother. So anything for us to be outdoors is a happy day. And the trail being, for the most part, right along the Potomac River, I think is one of the things that makes it very special. So it's a wonder, for us anyway, it's a wonderfully accessible place in terms of proximity. It's free. There's so many entry points. And it's just majestic. In my mother's later years, probably around the time she turned 89, 90, she really couldn't walk any distance of note. She could probably get from the car to the beginning of the trail, and that was it. And it was important for her, for us, to be able to take in the air and spend that kind of time together and take in the environment and have those adventures. So I did a little research to find a good lightweight travel chair that had some rugged wheels. The trail itself is pretty forgiving. It's not rocky, it's paved and all, but still there's freezer bumps and all sorts of things. So I needed it to be comfortable and safe for her as well, and reasonably easy for me to manage. And it was a wonderful vehicle to really enhance her day and subsequently both of our days. My mom had dementia, and she was still pretty good up until the end, but her memory and her thinking was definitely impaired, and there was this element of her reverting more to a childlike state, which was what it was, but it was also pretty delightful too. So when we would be on the trail by the river, you know, she just go, "Ooh, look at that lake." And now it's hard for me to call it the Potomac River and not Lake Potomac, because to her, especially when you're closer to the Mount Vernon side and away from a little bit more of the contention, it looks like a lake. It makes perfect sense. So it's things like that that would always make me giggle. But I think those are also some of the gifts of the trail as well.
The way that I think about it is like the trail exists because 50 years ago, two women in Alexandria convinced the Park Service to build it, and they brought the volunteers to build the first segment of it. And Ellen Pickering has passed away, but Barbara Lynch still lives in Alexandria. You know, I didn't live here by the time Ellen Pickering passed away, but I benefit every day from the work that she did. And She didn't know she was doing it for me. All along 18 miles of trail, our volunteers are out almost every Saturday, removing primarily bush honeysuckle and English ivy, which are very terrible for urban forests and shade out or crowd out native trees from growing. So all of the trees that you see along the trail, if we don't remove those things, once they die, there's not very many trees to replace them. So the work that we do today means that 20 years from now, somebody else is going to enjoy the trail the same way that we do. Yeah, when we formed, I never imagined or even thought about, it's not about trail maintenance. It's not about the trail. Everybody that's a leader is now like my friend. And the amount of people, you know, we've had thousands of people volunteer. And so all of those are new people I know and whose lives have intersected.
You're listening to Choose to be Curious, a show all about curiosity. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, but today our story is being told by people who have chosen to act on their appreciation for a place, whose sense of community and curiosity are piqued by an 18-mile stretch of parks and pathways along the Potomac River.
I met Susan on the trail one day. I was removing an invasive vine off a tree. And she stopped and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And so I explained what I was doing. And she pulled out some clippers from her bag. And she said, "Sometimes I cut things too." And so we sat and we chatted for maybe half an hour and talked about the trail and how she walks the trail all the time. And I was like, "Well, you don't have to do this surreptitiously. I can make you a real volunteer." And so she's, you know, she walks the trail multiple times a day. And I can always tell when she's traveling because she picks up trash and keeps it spotless. So if there's a piece of trash, it's like Susan's visiting another national park somewhere.
Well, I think the reason I started walking the trail was really to prepare for some hiking trips that I was doing overseas. But then it just became something that I want to do, like not every day, but pretty much every other day. So some of it was getting fit. It was just like, if I'm going to go on a hiking trip and need to hike 12 miles a day, let's get out there and make sure that I can at least do 6 a day. Well, I think what happened for me, and I thought about this quite a bit, is I go to Hawaii also and have been going for many years and participating in beach cleanups. And you really start to realize how much garbage is out there and also how bad it is for the animals. So while I was on the trail, every time I'm walking, I'm seeing trash. And it started with finding a plastic bag just about every time I was out there. So I would pick up that bag and fill it. And then it just became, it morphed into something greater. So I've been walking out there since long before the pandemic. So now when I walk, I just always take my pack and take a bag with me and fill it just about every time I'm out there, which I find astonishing. I do have a funny story, though. One group, a couple, I forget how it exactly happened, but they thought I was doing community service. And I really get the giggles now trying to decide what crime did they think that I committed, you know, that I would have to do community service. And I had to say, no, I'm a volunteer. There's these beautiful holly trees that I go by, and they were just covered to the top with this, what I learned is invasive porcelain berry. So I went with the Park Service, and they have a program to train what they call weed warriors. So I learned from them how to, you know, how to effectively and safely get rid of that. And I consider them mine now. There's about like a little over half dozen hollies that I've really worked on and got to go back year after year and go after them. But there's about half a dozen or more that I've liberated. And then farther down the trail, there's some beautiful, and I asked somebody from one of the Virginia naturalist organizations, I think it's called a slippery elm. They grow and their branches, you know, come down to the ground. And then the vines, of course, grab onto that. So there's two of those that I've really liberated. And it used to be you couldn't see through them when you walk by. And now those vines, actually, when I go out today, I'm taking my clippers because there's a couple I'm going to go after today. I know they're not, but they do feel like they're mine.
I sort of got interested in the Mount Vernon Trail in a more focused way. Because when I moved up to this area for the first time, I ended up getting an apartment right next to the Mount Vernon Trail. And now I love it. And I use it for all kinds of things, walking, running. I volunteer a lot, of course, with the Friends of Mount Vernon Trail. It's sort of like a nice social element there of connecting with neighbors and community and all that. So yeah, it's become sort of a focal point of my life. And it's like almost like a backyard for me as well. And a big part of this was iNaturalist, right? Because it was this amazing tool. I was on my phone. I would take these photos and then I would upload them. And then so another thing about iNaturalist is that there is a sort of an AI algorithm that will give you a pretty good guess about what it is that you're seeing. And that kind of cured what they call a plant blindness, where before I didn't really have a good sense of what plants were around me or like what was native, what was not native. And then all of a sudden you see the patterns in plants. You start to see, okay, that plant is in the pea family. That plant is in the rose family. That plant that's a type of sunflower. And you start to see the patterns in everything. And so it just completely changed, I think, my worldview and the way that I look. Whenever I'm on the Mount Vernon Trail, I just, you know, I notice these things.
It's interesting. Curiosity can be applied in a lot of different ways. And I've been mulling on this since we initially spoke. What it's done for me is piqued my curiosity both externally and internally. So there's the kind of more obvious external one, like with the friends. When you're out with them, they're teaching you how to identify invasive species, how to identify plants and flowers, how to identify bugs. There's external curiosity where I'm like, what is that building across the water? You know, there's some odd looking stuff on the Maryland side, right? And on the DC side. Or is that the capital that I'm seeing, you know, from this vantage point? And what else can I see? So there's a lot of external curiosity. But the other thing that happens when I'm on the trail often is I'm not on a screen. I'm not on the phone. I'm often by myself, just given the nature, or with my dog. And so there's the quiet internal opportunity to think without external input. I mean, there's the beautiful external input happening, but it's very different from the bombardment of email and phone call and things during the day. So I often spend time on my bike or on long walks with the dog. I'm writing in my head. I'm thinking through how would I answer certain questions from a constituent, for example. Yeah, I have a meeting later today and I was on the walk this morning and I was thinking to myself, you know, how will I respond to these things? So it provides that moment of clarity so that you can turn inward in a calm environment.
A lot is just stopping. And I don't mean that needs to be physically. You can still move your feet or be walking along. But it's just to take in what you see and give yourself a moment to use all your senses. How does it smell? What's the air feel like? And so on. And not make any judgment about it or even interpretations at that moment in time. Just sort of consider it. Because once one can, I'll use the word pause, it's not totally accurate, but just take that breath, if you will, there's even more that you start to see. And there's even more you start to wonder about. And I think that's incredibly exhilarating and fun and makes for me anyway, a much more memorable series of experiences at that moment in time and memories to reflect upon later or consciously or unconsciously incorporate to something down the road.
So there's a really lovely plant that it's called swamp rose mallow. I think its Latin name is Hibiscus maciostos or something like that. It's called swamp rose mallow, but I think it's technically not a rose. It looks a lot like a rose, but yeah, it's this big showy flower. It's a lot of times it's like pink and it grows in some of the wetlands around the Mount Vernon Trail. And there's one place in particular that's pretty close to me near Dangerfield Island. There's like a boardwalk and you're walking along it and you can just see, and like, I think it's usually like in August, you just see like all these swamp rose mallows just blooming and it's a nice, cool effect. I really like that one.
Well, one thing I do find is and I'm not sure if it's a curiosity practice, but is my eye has become trained. When I'm walking along, I can see right away, oh, that's trash. You know, I get fooled by leaves, and I get fooled by the Canada goose feathers. I get fooled by them, and I walk all the way out, you know, and try to pick it up. And, oh, no, it's a leaf, or oh, no, it's a feather. But my eyes have gotten pretty trained to see. And it makes me think about sailors, the watermen. You know, they can look out there, and they can see right away. There's either a whale or a dolphin fin, because they know what that landscape or that waterscape looks like. And it's the same kind of sensitivity, I think, to your environment or to, you know, to where you are, to notice what's out of place or what's kind of unusual. But little, you know, little things that just happen unexpectedly. One time I was walking and I saw this kind of strange wake in the water, and I walked a little bit more, and then it was a beaver, you know, swimming upstream. So things like that are just little moments that happen that are just kind of wonderful. And there's that expression that I love that, you know, you can climb 100 mountains in your lifetime or climb the same mountain 100 times. And you do learn, you know, it's different every day. It changes either the amount of people that are out there or the weather or the birds or the animals. So it's changing all the time.
I use the trail almost every day, and I'm always amazed that, one, when you travel slower, you get to notice things a lot more, and you also have time to investigate or poke and say, oh, what's this? And it never ceases to amaze me that sometimes I will notice something new that's like, I've passed by this 100 times before. What, how did I not see this before? And my experience walking the trail is much different than my experience riding a bike on the trail. So when I walk the trail, it's even slower, and there's just more time to think and notice things, and it's easier to stop and look at things. And so my experience of the trails changed that way, depending on what mode that I'm traveling. Just thinking about the curiosity question again, one thing that working on the trails really helped with is there's always novel problems. And so I'm a researcher. So the joke is, like, anytime we're faced with a challenge, I go and watch like 20 hours of YouTube videos to try to figure out, like, somebody's figured this out before. And so with 18 miles of trail that sometimes places are inaccessible, so things like, how do you get a 60-pound bag of cold patch asphalt to a pothole on the trail that is a mile from the nearest place that you could pull off a car? How do you get water to a bridge that is not accessible by a car? Those sort of challenges are always like, let me figure this out.
You've been listening to Choose to be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining me and my guests from the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail, Susan, Lori, Austin, President and Co-Founder Jed Isbell, and Alexandria City Council Member Sarah Bagley. Special thanks to Cameron Taylor, who coordinates volunteers for the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail. She received my very vague and tentative outreach with enthusiasm and open arms, putting me in touch with all of today's guests. Find the Friends online at mountvernontrail.org. You can find all my shows and related links on my website at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on social media at Choose to be Curious. Today's music is by Warm Body via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time, and that you follow the example of the Friends of the Mount Vernon Trail by investing your time, energy, attention, your curiosity in a place that's meaningful for you. Until next time, choose to be curious.
One of the things I like to do very much when I'm out on a trail is to, if I see a flower or something that I hadn't seen before, is come home and look it up. And not look it up on the computer, look it up in a field guide or a book. Sometimes I have to resort to the computer because I just can't tell, and there are good sites out there. And then I'll draw it in a little book and label it and think about it. And I may never use one of the things I learned about again, but there's sometimes it's just fun to learn. So there's a wildflower on the trail, and it's called jewelweed. And it's from the touch-me-not family. It's this beautiful, it is like a gem, but if you touch it, it explodes. So, and I don't know what I'll ever do with that information, but I guess I'm doing something with it now.
Good evening. You are listening to WDRT Viroqua.
The following program was recorded in 2017 and doesn't have the context of the latest disruptions in the Middle East, but all the efforts to promote understanding between the sides in the conflict, including the one described in this program, continue to do their work with hope for peace in the Middle East. And we felt it deserved the spotlight offered by this encore presentation. This is Peace Talks Radio. We're the nonpartisan, nonpolitical forum on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution strategies. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. Our guest for the hour is Janessa Gans Wilder, who runs a nonprofit organization called the Euphrates Institute that promotes peace building through dialogue and understanding and education, particularly surrounding conflict issues in the Middle East. Janessa was a CIA counterinsurgency analyst in Iraq. But when she became frustrated with the futility of the war effort, she asked for reassignment to working with Iraqi leaders to build the country's new democracy. Later, she left the CIA and began this Euphrates Institute, whose purpose became to make the other a brother. Janessa's on the line with us from Redding, California, headquarters of the Euphrates Institute. Thanks for joining us today on Peace Talks Radio, Janessa.
Thank you, Paul. So nice to be here.
Euphrates Institute began when? What year did you incorporate that?
Well, I officially founded it right on the heels of that tour in Iraq that you mentioned at the beginning of 2006. So I was ready for complete change from CIA work, counterinsurgency, and counterterrorism, and really had no idea what I was doing at first, but officially started it in 2006, but then it actually took quite a few more years before I got things off the ground.
To start, so our listeners can get kind of oriented, what's your thumbnail description of what the Euphrates Institute is doing best right now, some 10 years into its history?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the best thing we're doing is creating a global community of peace builders around the world who are intent on turning the other into a brother. And that was really what I experienced personally in Iraq, seeing Iraqis as the enemy, seeing them as the other, and then having an experience by the Euphrates River and opening up my thought and my heart to seeing them as partners and as friends. And we